This is Get a Real Job, the podcast devoted to people who choose risk over safe bets, who pursue their passion against all odds and are doing what they want, how they want, despite people and sometimes the voices in their own heads telling them they're nuts.
When the field that I wanted to work in didn't exist, I created it.
The only thing you have to decide is how hard do you want to work.
I really never went into the design of the restaurant of not succeeding. One way or another, I was going to succeed.
I'm your host, Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Thanks for listening. And now, get a real job. Today's guest is a wanted outlaw. Or maybe he isn't. I'm honestly not really sure how this all works. Tim Smith is a moonshiner on Discovery Channel's hit series Moonshiners and Moonshiners Master Distillers, which you can now stream on Discovery Plus. We're going to talk about booze and the big bucks behind it. Welcome, Tim Smith. How are you?
Great, Dan. How are you?
I am good. I am good. And are you a wanted man? And more importantly, by talking to you, am I an accessory to the crime?
Well, you know, right now, since I went on TV with Discovery Channel, I think I'm more wanted now than ever. You know, years back, I was considered wanted, but they didn't know who I was or where I was at.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of flipped around the opposite way there.
Right. Right. So just to give people a little bit of your history, you know, how long have you been involved with moonshine? And, you know, how did it go when a camera guy showed up at your door and was like, hey, you want to do this on TV?
Yeah, well, you know, to back it up all the way and to tell you the true story and the roots of the story, I got started, I was about 5 years old, which is a long time ago.
Okay.
And the way that happened was, there was an option at 5 years old, you could go to kindergarten and you would go into first grade at 6 years old. That was the option. And you didn't necessarily have to go to kindergarten, you know, unless you just really needed to. And my dad was into the moonshining, and my whole family, you know, history is all about moonshining. And this is just where I live, you know. It wasn't like that I moved to this location. I was born at this location. Mm-hmm. And, so my dad gave me this option. He says, well, I'll tell you what. He says, you hang with me and we'll do a little business. That's what he would call it. We'll do a little business and you be like my helper. And he says, I pay you a little bit on the side, which we're talking about like a dollar now. We're talking about
right.
$1 now. You know, I'm 5 years old. And he says, you just hang with me. And he says, I'm pretty sure you'll learn more with me than you will if you go to kindergarten. So I did. I put it to my mind that I was going to do that. And my mom was okay with it. And she says, you know, you take care of him. And I did. And when I went to first grade, I could count to 100. I knew my ABCs and I knew all about money. And I even knew the names of the presidents that was on the money when I went to first grade. So I was way ahead. I was way ahead of the rest of them, and I skipped kindergarten. And that was, I would have to say, that's my beginning of my moonshine
right.
career. Was about 5 years old when I skipped kindergarten.
That's amazing.
I mean, I skipped the whole year. I mean, I skipped the whole year, but I learned more in that year than most people do in 10, probably.
Yeah, but could you stack blocks like the rest of us? Come on, Tim.
Well, I mean, I tried. I tell you what I did. I tried to carry the milk jugs, you know.
Yeah.
And the big guys would carry 6 gallon jugs in one hand. Well, you know, there's no way I could do that at 5 years old, but I could carry one in each hand. I could carry 2 gallons. And then as I got bigger, my dad showed me a trick. He would take the shoestrings and tie them together. So it'd be easier for me to grab them and pick them up. And then I got to where I could carry 4 at
right.
a time. And then finally I carried 6. You know, I carried 3 in each
wow.
hand.
That's,
you know, that's 24 pounds in each hand, you know.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, I was in pretty good shape and I was smart too when I went to first grade.
Yeah, geez, I don't think I could carry that much now. So that's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So can you explain to people, you know, obviously, moonshine has an incredible history in America. You know, your piece of that history, your family's history, and how the family got involved in it. And then, you know, let's get into how when you were that kindergarten age, were you like, you know what, one day I'm going to do this on TV?
Well, nowhere in my mind that I had thoughts of doing it on TV. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that, not at 5 years old, because those are some other things that and traits that I had learned. My family had a long time history of moonshining and bootlegging and getting in trouble with the law. So that was something that I was taught what not to do, the things not to do that get you in trouble. So I learned a lot about the law and what not to do. So it's kind of like, yes, I was taught that we're breaking the law because we're not paying taxes. You know, that's the main purpose of moonshining is tax revenue, because it's a tax controlled substance. And when you're traveling with moonshiners and bootleggers, they would teach you the tactics of, you know, what not to do, cover your tracks and fingerprints and move at nighttime and go the long way around and switch vehicles and, you know, all kinds of different tactics that I learned. And my dad always taught me to do as he told me to do, don't do as I do, because my dad had been in jail. My other family members, uncles and brothers and stuff, they had all been in jail for moonshine and bootlegging. So you learn more from mistakes than you do from actually not making mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't sink in as deep, I guess. You know, it's kind of like when you get hurt. You know, when you get hurt or you fall down or something, you say, "Oh, don't do that again."
Right.
You know, it hurt really bad.
That's a good point.
Well, yeah.
So, for people who haven't watched, you know, now we've got this, that you've got this streaming service where they could jump right in. Are there any moments, from the past, what is it, 10 seasons now, that, really stand out to you as maybe shining moments for you? Like, that went great. And then maybe some moments that, you weren't so thrilled to have caught on camera.
Well, I think the best moment on camera was on the first season. If we go all the way back to the first season of Moonshiners was me, you know, in the woods illegally, teaching my son the right way to do this, like my father had taught me. And that's what it was. And, we had actually went onto a property and there was a no trespassing sign there. And I read this sign to my son, and it was kind of funny, but I was serious. And I read the sign, and it says no trespassing. It says no hunting or fishing or trapping allowed on this property. So I look at my son, and I says, "Well, at least we're not going to do none of those." You know, and it was kind of funny. I mean, I said it right. I just read the sign.
Yeah.
And the camera guy, which I only had one camera back then, you know, we just had one. We actually had two, but one guy quit on the first day. So we went up with one camera guy to follow us. Yeah. And it was kind of a skeleton-like thing. And we didn't know if it was going to make it or not, you know, because this was like a dangerous occupation, okay?
Yeah.
And this is something that no one had ever seen behind the scenes, you know, and here I go going to do this. And I was nervous too, but I was serious about telling the story to my son. So the camera guy says, "Well, you know," he was from Georgia, and he goes, "I'm with you. Wherever you go, I'm with you. We all go to jail, we all going to jail. We all get killed, we all get killed." And it wasn't like 30 minutes later, we run up onto this bridge and this woman and a guy comes out with a shotgun, and he's kind of like blocking me from going across the bridge.
Oh, wow.
So this was like one of those moments.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those moments, and I'm thinking, here we go, you know. and just 3 hours before that, the camera guy had asked me, he says, "What do you think we're going to see? Where do you think we're going to go? What do you think we're going to do?" I'm like, "Look, guy, I don't have no script here. All I know is get in the truck and let's go."
Yeah.
And, you know, and then that's what happened. And then when we did get back, he was so excited. He was just, he said, "I can't believe it. And I can't wait to send this in, and they're not going to believe it. And I got it on camera and there's all of this." And I'm like, Hell, we're just driving down the road. We haven't did nothing yet. I mean, we haven't even got the moonshine yet. We're just going down the road, you know.
Wait, so it
seemed to be a pretty good hit. Just my, I don't know, just my enthusiasm or just my location or just my background, or maybe it's my accent, the way I explain things. I don't know, but people just get into it.
Yeah.
You know, they just love it.
So how'd you, what about the guy on the bridge with the shotgun? Did he let you?
Well, we had a small discussion and I talked to him about moonshining because I had recognized that this possibly was his property.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing you do in moonshining. You know, some people look at it as you go out into the wilderness somewhere where nobody's going to find you and you make moonshine. Well, that's not the right way to do things. You kind of want to ask for permission because if you don't, you're really going to get in trouble now because you got the law enforcement's going to get you and you got the landowner.
Yeah.
So I asked the guy about moonshining. Had anyone been moonshining around the area? I did not say myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, no, we're not going to have no moonshining around here. So he was kind of straightforward of like, I don't want to have nothing to do with no moonshining. So that lets me know where I stand without actually asking the question.
Yeah. Got it.
You know, you kind of got to play the psychology a little bit to get where you need to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you explain, because I guess I'm a little bit confused on this, how is this show, so you're on camera, you're doing these things, how do the cops not show up to your house, you know, every time an episode airs? Like, what's the legality of that?
Well, after the first season, they did show up to my house.
Oh, okay.
They did show up to my house.
All right. Well, you there you go.
Because you got to look at, it's after the point now. It's after the fact.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I've got a race car in the garage. But does that mean I'm speeding down the highway?
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm speeding down the highway, but I have the capability of speeding down
right,
the highway.
Got it.
Same as I got a gun. I got a gun, but what is the purpose of the gun? Am I going to shoot a deer? Am I going to target practice or I'm going to shoot a person?
Right.
So
right.
Until after the point of committing the crime, and then we have to collect physical evidence of the crime. So then, you know, the legalities, if you want to get down to it, and I learned this in my early days, you got to be proven guilty in a court of law. Other than that, go away.
So,
that's the kind of way it works. Just like you get a speeding ticket, too. You got options. You can admit to guilt when you get the speeding ticket, or you can go down the road and get away, or you can be proven guilty in a court of law.
Right. Got it.
So, if you appeal it, all the way until the court of law, then here comes the physical evidence and the witness, which is arresting officer would be the witness of the crime. So after I saw it on TV, that's kind of after the fact, plus there's editing that is taking place by the time it does air. So it would not hold up in court of law. So I have to go back to physical evidence, but how do I go back in time and get physical evidence of something that happened in the past?
Got it.
So it gets very difficult. Plus, we look at it, this is a heritage. This is my culture. This is what we do since 1500. You know, this is nothing new. It's just new to the new generation of people who are watching the show.
Right. And can you talk about, so I'm master distillers now, you're tasting other people's products and can you talk a little bit about, I have had moonshine. It is not a weak drink, but what are you looking for? Like what makes a great moonshine versus something that you want to spit out?
Well, you know, first, like anything, you're looking at smell. Smell is always first. When you're eating and drinking, it's always the smell. If you cannot smell it, it's a little bit tricky. Vodka is one of those good examples.
Mm.
But moonshine, you should be able to smell something or some character of maybe possibly what it's made from. So what kind of grain is it made from and what kind of fruit or whatever it's made from, that base, you should be able to smell some of that. And if that has a good mellow smell, you know, it's okay. It's not a little tricky. Sometimes you can get tricky on that because some people like to add things to that moonshine. And then you get into the taste profile, and it goes, you know, I say nose and palate here both together. You're going to taste what you smell somewhat too. So if it smells good, then sometimes that's going to modify the taste to being tasting good. Mm-hmm. And then you got the, you know, the first and the beginning, the middle, you got the beginning, first, middle, and at the end on your taste palate, you know, can you drink it? Can you taste it? Can you swallow it? Does it go away? Does it have a smooth, buttery taste? Is it going to be attractive to make you want another drink? You know, are you going to want to taste it again? Mm. If you taste it one time and it kind of shocks your palate, you may not want to taste it again.
Right, right.
And then also you got the character of looking at it too. You know, you got the clarity of it and the proof. You know, we proof it by looking at the beads of how it settles on top. So we look at that bead and we can tell about what is the range of that alcohol gravity. I mean, nowadays they got a hydrometer that you put it and it floats, but I never had one of those until I went legal. Which I know I've only been legal 8 years, but you know, we never used one of those because it really don't mean anything. To me, proof doesn't mean anything. Mm. Taste and smell is more important to me than the proof. But now on the legal side, the legality, everyone wants to know what the number is. Is it 90 proof? Is it 100 proof? Is it 120 proof? But really, that gets misleading because you can have something that tastes really good at 120, and you can have something that tastes really good at 80 proof. So right. Numbers is nothing but a value that they put on something to kind of grade it. That's all it is.
And for people who haven't tried moonshine before and they want to try legal moonshine, you know, how do you get it? I live in New York. Can I just go to a liquor store and get moonshine? How does that work?
Sure, you can go to the store and look at it. But now, my brand is Climax Moonshine. Now, my brand is in upstate New York. I don't have it in a city. But you can order online. You know, you can go to timsmithspirits.com. You can order my brand offline, and they can bring it to you. I'm legal in the state of New York, so they bring it right to your house. You know, you might have to sign for it over 21 years old. But today, you can just about ship to any state in the United States, and you can receive it through the mail.
And what's for your brand, what's the best novice, first-time moonshine sipper? What do you recommend?
More coming up from our guests, but first, a word from our sponsor.
We're all jaded and suspicious. Well, at least I am. But I think that's a good thing because as soon as you let your guard down, bam, someone is ripping you off. So when I first heard that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month, I thought, come on, what's the catch? What's the scam here? But after speaking with their representatives and using their service, I learned there ain't one, buddy. There's no scam. There's no catch. Mint Mobile is becoming insanely popular because it is genuinely inexpensive, and more importantly here, it works. How can this possibly be so inexpensive? Well, I'm glad you asked. To get a little businessy here, Mint Mobile's wireless service is online only. So by cutting out retail stores, there's no crazy overhead costs that get passed down to you in the form of all those crappy fees that get tagged onto your bill. I mean, $15 a month beats the hell out of my old provider plan, which was honest and truly more than my car payment. And it has unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You get to keep your same phone number, all your existing contacts, and if you're not 100% satisfied, because nothing will satisfy you, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. So switch to Mint Mobile. You get premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. I don't know what you're spending a month right now, but that is a lot less than I was. So to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/GARJ. That stands for get a real job, by the way. That's mintmobile.com/GARJ. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/GARJ.
And we're back.
I would recommend to have a good chaser beside you to go beside it. You know, myself, I like to drink it straight with something behind it. I don't like to dilute it and mix it like a cocktail. But you can make it into a cocktail. You know, I sell margaritas. Margaritas is a perfect drink for a moonshine because it takes the place of tequila. But myself, I would just have something to chase behind it. Whether it's a soda pop, Mountain Dew, Pepsi Cola. I'm a sweet tea guy. You know, I'm a Southern boy. But I would say anything sweet in character to go behind your first taste.
Wait, you're from the South? I couldn't tell from your accent.
No, you couldn't. Well, it's actually way past you. It's Nova Scotia. So, you know.
That's great. So you've been all these episodes now that are on Discovery Plus, you've been on Discovery for how long? For at least 10 years, right?
10 years, yeah. I'm the beginner, founder, and father. I started Moonshiners 2011, and I think I've been in over 200 episodes. So I've probably did more shows than Clint Eastwood in a short period of time.
Wow, that's amazing. And do you and the other Discovery guys that have their own companies, like the Gold Rush guys or the crab fishermen, do you guys all get together? And what do they think of your moonshine? Have you ever served a crab fisherman your moonshine?
Well, you know, that's funny. I did some appearances with some of the guys, like Dillis Catch. Never actually met anyone on the Gold Rush, but on the Dillis Catch. And, you know, we're all different personalities from different geographic areas. And surprisingly, they don't know what moonshine is. It's like they're from another world somewhere. They're from another country or something. I don't know. I travel a lot of different countries, and they can relate to moonshine, but those people are into what they're into, just like me. You know, I don't know anything about digging for gold, and I don't know anything about, catching fish in the oceans. But just the ones I have met, it's a different animal for them. It's like a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. That's the first
time. Wow, what is that? Where did it come from?
Yeah, yeah. So can you give people a sense, just from the business side of making moonshine, like, What's the market like, and, you know, how have you expanded your business? I'm guessing that you started very locally, and, you know, now, as you said, you're selling in all these different states. How does that work, and how's business been?
Well, business has been pretty good. You know, it is 8 years old now. You know, I'm not 100 years old. I'm only 8 years old in the legal business. Mm. And it does get a little complicated because you have to start somewhere. And when you start out in the legal distilling business, that is a federal license. And then it goes to, when you retail it or sell it, then that is a state license. So you can have a federal license to distill in any state in the United States, but to retail and sell it, you have to go through each state. And each state holds a different license, a different requirement. It's a different annual fee that you have to pay to hold that license. And then the retail market, it kind of falls into a geographic area also. You have different people who live in different places, just like me and you. You know, I talk a different language, even though I'm in the United States.
Right.
And I may even drink my product differently than you do in New York. So my geographics, you know, moonshine and the NASCAR kind of go together, I like to say. So if you're in Georgia, Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, maybe on up into Indiana, Maryland, everybody knows what moonshine is, and just about everyone has had it, whether it's illegal or legal. If you get out into, say, Wyoming, New Mexico, Arizona, even in California, you get a different vibe. You got different people, so the sales is not as good. But then again, you know, you got to look at population. So if you go into different populations, I mean, I may sell a whole lot in say Dallas, Texas versus Baltimore, Maryland, but it's just because of the population and the different variables and people. But I'm legal in 42 states out of the 50. So it goes up and down as the weather also, you know, if you got a cold region, like upstate New York is real good. They are real good moonshine drinkers up there.
Mm. Good job, New Yorkers. I'm proud to hear that.
Yeah. But if you go to Key West and Miami, they totally lost unless you put it in a cocktail. If you put it in a cocktail, they never know what it is.
Come on, Miami, step up.
I'm just letting you know how it is, you know. But if you tell them it's moonshine, they might be scared of it. But if you go ahead and mix it into a cosmopolitan or something and put it out there, they're like, oh, yeah, that tastes pretty good.
That's great. Well, I was going to ask you, too, you know, having talked to people who, you know, do small batch bourbon or vodka, as you mentioned, you know, a big thing is obviously the quality of the product. But then, okay, there's a lot of other ones of these out there. You know, how do you stand out in the market? And what's your advice to people on that front? Like, what's been successful for you? And if I was going to start a moonshine or a bourbon company tomorrow, you know, what would be your advice to me about my brand?
Well, you know, marketing is number one. And then the quality comes second. I started off kind of upside down, just like anyone else. You know, you think you have the best brand and you have the best recipe and you got the best process and it tastes really good. But if you can't get marketing out front to get people to buy your product, then they will never taste it.
Mm,
so that is the most difficult problem. And that's where Discovery Channel comes in. Great for me is marketing. Just FaceTime being on TV, whether or not I'm making moonshine or not. Just being able for people to recognize my face and my voice, I guess, and put it together, it helps in market value. Mm-hmm. And if you can put 80% of your money out front and 20% in the back.
Yeah. Okay.
You got to get people to recognize who you are and what you stand for and what you got to sell. Because if they don't buy it, then they won't taste it, and then you'll never sell it. It's kind of like the pretty woman on the magazine.
that's great advice. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, that's what it is. That magazine will never leave the shelf if it doesn't have something attractive on the front of it.
Right.
They can have all kinds of good stuff inside, but nobody's going to buy it.
Yeah. No, that's great advice. So all these episodes are available, as I said, on Discovery Plus. Tim, it's been great talking to you, and you know, maybe give us one more moment that we could look for, or a behind the scenes story that never made it on air.
Oh, that never made it on air? Oh. I don't know if I can tell you anything.
Don't worry, the Discovery lawyers are not listening, so you can just say whatever you want.
Well, I would like to tell you two funnies. So I want to tell you one that did make it on air, and that is differences in attitude sometimes. My partner Tickle on the show, when I decided to go legal, and it took me about 2 or 3 years of being on a TV show before I got some support of people wanting to say, okay, I think you got a good idea here. And when I brought it to Tickle, he kind of like, he liked it and it was good and he was still my friend, but he didn't want to have no part in it. He wanted to stay illegal.
Huh, okay.
So sometimes it's difficult in picking your partners,
right.
You know, your business partners, because you don't know what they're going to change. They're going to change on you in the future. And I see a lot of people do this. They go into business because it's financial. They say, okay, I got $100,000, you got $100,000. Now we're going to be partners. And they go into business, and then, you know, 2 or 3 years later down the road, one says, well, I'm going to buy you out, and the other one says, I want to quit or whatever.
Yeah.
You have that. But I will tell you one behind the scenes. I don't know how funny it is, but remember I was telling you about I had that one camera guy riding with me?
Yeah.
And I was shooting the show Moonshiners on the first season. And, you know, there's no way to shoot the camera guys on the show because the camera guys are shooting you on the show. They don't have camera guys watching camera guys.
Yeah.
So this guy's riding in the back of the truck. And we had pulled out of the steel sites. And when I'm going down the road and the guy's riding in the back and we have the window open and he starts beating on the back of the truck and he's like, "Hey, stop, stop, stop." And I go, "What is it?" And he goes, "I smell gas."
Oh, God.
And I'm like, "Gas?" So I stop and I look and I'm like, "There's a hole in the gas tank."
Oh,
we
geez.
Had punched a hole and the gas was running out.
No.
So the guy says, "What are we going to do?" I'm like, "I don't know, but I'm going to the gas station because we're going to run out of gas." So I jump in the truck and I take off and the guy jumped out the back of the truck and I had to stop again. I says, "What are you doing?" He goes, "There's gas running out of the truck. I can't ride in the truck with the gas running out." And I said, "Well, I guess you're going to have to walk because I'm not," you know, because I was looking at if we don't make it to the gas station while the gas is running out, we're going to be stuck on the side of the road.
Yeah,
so I'd rather be at the gas station out of gas than down this dirt road with a camera guy in the back of the thing beating on the side of the truck.
Well, that's good. I'm glad.
It's not on the show. You know, I don't know if that means anything, but at the time, it's kind of funny for me.
You know, if only we all had a camera guy, you know, watching our back to let us know the terrible thing that was happening that we weren't aware of.
I would have already made it there if he hadn't stopped me.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but he was concerned that gas was coming out of the gas.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I was too,
but I was like, "Well, don't light up nothing and just hold on."
Right. Yeah. That's good advice. Don't light a cigarette if you're in a truck that's actively leaking gasoline. That's a bad idea.
Yeah. That is a good statement.
Yeah. Well, on that helpful note, I want to thank you for dialing us up and sharing your story. And you've had some awesome success. And I'm definitely, I got to try some of this moonshine. Sounds pretty good.
My Max Moonshine. Go online, KimSmithSpirits.com. Find you some.
Excellent. All right, man. Great talking to you. Right. Talk again soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Right.
That's our episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Get a Real Job comes out every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you harvest your favorite podcasts. Leave us a review. Give us a share. Don't make me beg, people. Go to entrepreneur.com for new episodes of this and to listen to our other great podcasts. Thanks.